Yeah, good morning. I call the Senate Finance Meeting Committee to order. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 9:05 a.m. on Monday, May 6, 2024. With me is Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick. We have Co-Chair Hoffman will be by shortly, as well as Senator Wilson. Today we have one bill on the agenda, that's Senate Bill 217. We're going to be taking public commentary on it. Senate Bill 217, the rail belt transmission line by the governor. We heard this bill several times over the last week, including invited testimony from major stakeholders. This morning we're taking public testimony. We'll open the public testimony. Who should we take? Is Mr. Erlinger Goodhoffman? Are you on, sir?
Yes, hello. Erlinger Goodlefson here, Iceland.
Yeah, we see you're way over there, so we thought we'd put you on first. Go ahead with your public testimony, please.
Excellent. Chair and members of the Finance Committee, I want to touch on a few things regarding Bill SB 217. First, I would like to tell you how I enjoyed having the opportunity to show legislators around Iceland last fall in the policy tour we at ASEP organized. Through my work at University of Alaska Fairbanks, I realized that Alaska and Iceland have surprisingly many things in common. But most importantly for us here today is to recognize similarities in the power sector. As Alaska, Iceland has mostly public power, where the state generates more than 70% of all power, but also there are vertically integrated municipality-owned utilities that both generate and distribute power. For about two decades, the Icelandic power sector has been going through incremental changes that at first were driven by the EU policy, but nowadays driven more by internal motivation. The fundamental changes I'm referring to is separation between generation and transmission that led to the establishment of the Icelandic Transmission System Operator, TSO, named Landsnet. This was one of the main focus points during the policy tour last fall that I referred to in the beginning. Now, one might ask, was this just no problem, forcing transmission assets owner to either sell or hand over their assets in exchange for equity in this newly established TSO company? Here it's worth mentioning that some concerns arose regarding dominating the state power producer Landsvirkjun was within that company. Having formerly owned about 70% of all transmission assets, it was reflected in their dominance within the company. This was later sorted out when the state bought most of the shares. So today the state owns about 95% of all shares in the TSO. Furthermore, this procedure is known to have been a good decision for Iceland, and today there is broad agreement that this was an important step in creating and competitive energy market. We at UAF have shared many of the details about this unbundling procedure of the Icelandic TSO in a paper that I wrote with my colleague at University of Alaska Fairbanks, Glenn Altman. I appreciate their collaboration and partnership the Icelandic TSO has shown us for the past year or so, or since we started establishing understanding on how Alaska might benefit from another islanded grid in the Arctic. At last, I would like to thank you for the opportunity given to me here today to testify on our work. Thank you.
Do we have any questions from my members of the committee for Mr. Goodlefson? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning, and thank you for the long-distance phone call.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Good luck with this procedure.
Okay, thanks. Next we have is Jen Miller. Ms. Miller, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you so much. My name is Jen Miller, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Renewable IPP, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. Thank you to co-chairs and finance committee members for the opportunity to speak today. Our company is an Alaska-grown business, and we develop, construct, and operate utility-scale solar farms on the Rail Belt, and you may be aware of our Willow and Houston projects. Renewable IPP strongly supports SB 217, and we urge the legislature to pass this critical legislation this session, as every year we wait, ratepayers are exposed to greater supply risk, and energy costs will compound as a result. SB 217 is critical policy that will enable significant energy diversification in the Rail Belt. This legislation does two things. Sets up an organization to drive and oversee upgrading our transmission system, and two, creates a fair market for independent power producers like us to deploy large-scale generation projects at the lowest cost to the consumer. Renewable IPP supports establishing an RTO to drive transmission system upgrades with Rail Belt-wide decision-making to ensure equal access to low-cost power. New generation projects that capture economies of scale will be required to tie into the transmission system, and upgrading this system is a key step to enabling a more diverse energy mix. As these upgrades could be a bottleneck for future projects, we think it makes sense to have a dedicated organization that can focus on executing these upgrades and go after federal funding opportunities. SB 217 also equalizes the tax treatment for IPPs and utilities and eliminates wheeling charges. These are two critical items that enable lower wholesale energy prices from IPPs to utilities and ultimately ratepayers. These changes also create defined financial parameters which give investors economic certainty and create a more attractive investment climate for Alaska IPP projects. Our only edit request for SB 217 is related to the wholesale contracts that go to the RCA. We support transparently demonstrating how tax exemption to IPPs pass through to ratepayers as part of our power purchase agreement filing with the RCA. We respectfully request to narrow the scope in Section 6, Version U, to apply solely to the state and local tax exemptions and to remove the government subsidies portion, as some of these subsidies are not fully known until the project is built. And that's after the PPA has been approved. And some subsidies may be pursued during project execution as a means to manage downside risk. Including government subsidies introduces contract recycle risk and contract uncertainty for the project's most critical contract, which is that power purchase agreement. This will ultimately turn away investment in Alaska projects. And I submitted a formal comment this past Friday on March 3rd with additional details for that requested change. I'd like to close by saying thank you to this committee and the legislature as a whole for working so hard this session to improve our energy future. And again, I'd like to voice our strong support for passing SB 217 this session. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Miller? Ms. Miller, thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Thank you.
Next up is Philip White. Mr. White, are you on, sir?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to thank the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Philip White, and I live in Esther, Alaska. I'm testifying today as a private individual and not on behalf of any organization I work for. My personal perspective is informed by my scholarship as an energy historian of Alaska, namely a study I've just completed for the Alaska Center for Energy and Power on a generation and transmission history of the Rail Belt, and I'd be happy to make this available to the committee if you all are interested. My overarching comment today is not about the granular specifics of the legislation in front of you, but rather about the urgent need to create a Rail Belt transmission organization as soon as possible. I strongly support SB 217's elimination of wheeling fees, creation of an effective transmission organization, and ensuring vital transmission assets are properly owned and managed. And let me offer a brief story from our past, which I think really underscores this need. In 1956, Chugach, Matanuska, and Homer Electric Associations came together and formed a generation and transmission cooperative called the Central Alaska Power Association, or CAPA. This was the first Rail Belt transmission organization. The purpose of CAPA was to reduce costs by creating a power pool and developing cheap power generation, what they called dump power rates from hydropower. And their main project was focused on Cooper Lake Hydro down on the Kenai Peninsula. But friction over the venture quickly emerged and doomed the Rail Belt's first GNT cooperative. Although it accomplished tangible work, CAFA stumbled in the face of widespread resistance and ultimately folded in 1957, just a year later. Shoegatch moved forward on its own to develop that Cooper Lake Hydro Project and build the transmission lines to the Kenai. I think this event is crucial for two reasons. I argue it's the origins of the contentious relationships between rail belt cooperatives. And number two, for the past 67 years, an entire lifetime, Alaska's rail belt cooperatives have been trying, but unfortunately have not been successful in creating an effective transmission organization. We've had numerous GMT cooperatives, Gretzky's, Transco's, etc. The history of rail belt generation and transmission demonstrates that there's always been intelligent, forward-thinking individuals trying to create efficiency and reduce costs by linking the rail belt. Yet good intentions and earnest efforts have been insufficient to overcome inertia and barriers to rail belt unification. Creating an effective transmission organization has been stifled by intransigent single parties and the accumulated weight of past disputes. And so I would argue that utilities cannot create and manage an effective transmission organization by themselves. They need the leadership and the action of the legislature. We need to create a model where one party or one utility cannot derail the progress of the entire rail belt. And I believe that's what the RTO does in SB 217 in front of you today, and why I am strongly supportive of the legislation. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Mr. White by members of the committee? Senator Bishop.
I just have a comment for the chair. My hearing sometimes is not as good on the audio. And I think he offered to provide his written testimony to the committee. And with the chair's consideration, I'd like to have that provided to us.
Did you hear that request, Mr. White?
I did, and I'm happy to submit it.
If you would, please. We have seven members of the committee here, and so we'd all like a report. Thank you very much for making that available.
Thank you.
I want to note that Senator Wilson has joined us, and that Senator Diesel has been in the gallery for most of the morning. Next up is Ken Griffin. Mr. Griffin, are you on, sir?
Yep, good afternoon. I just want to, and I've been supporting this bill. I've read all the energy bills, all of them, and I think everybody knows that the only people that are for this bill, citizen-wise, are those who stand to profit from it. None of the citizens are calling in support of these bills, especially this one. There's no reason why these people should not have to pay their way when getting onto the grid. Someone has to maintain the grid and balance the load. And the truth is, if the citizens don't know or don't want it, the private citizens don't know or don't want it, then why would you ever vote for it? You represent the citizens, not special interests. That's my opinion. I'm not trying to be rude or disrespectful in any way. I'm trying to just point out the fact that this body does not work for Santos or Berkshire Hathaway, the people that stand to make big money off this and grift off of Alaskans. Your job's to mitigate damage to the citizen. You're my lobbyist. And I expect you guys to stand tall on this. This bill is terrible for the state, and everybody knows it. And that's why all the citizens that call in for it are against it, and all the special interests that call in for it are for it, because they want to grift off the people. And I hope, no matter what happens with this, that everyone gets held accountable come time to be reelected, because this is terrible. And the economics on this are brutal, and everybody can see it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this morning, Mr. Griffin. That's the last of the people that are online. Nobody's in the room, so we'll go ahead and recess to call of the chair in case more people are calling in a little bit later. We'll call the Senate Finance meeting back to order. We have one additional caller, Cassie Andrews. Ms. Andrews, are you on, ma'am?
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Coming in loud and clear. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, committee members. For the record, Cassie Andrews out of Anchorage. I'm representing myself. I'm opposed to this legislation. This is subsidy on top of subsidy on top of subsidy. I look to my local co-op for cost effectiveness and reliability. I do not want socialism in my power, and that is what you're talking about here. I've heard repeatedly where the experts use Iceland as the example we need to follow. They have an astronomical income tax and sales tax in Iceland. What's next? Civics lessons from Beijing? There is a reason for the tariffs and fees to enter onto the grid. Who pays for the inefficiencies in the wind and solar IPPs? Who pays to regulate all of their power? Our legacy generation does. Meanwhile, it suffers because by default, all of these central planning groups you're talking about look at Texas ERCOT, become uninterested in investments in our firm power. This results in the collapse of our co-ops and where privately owned entities come in to save the day. In the end, we end up with no accountability as we have now through our local boards where the needs of the ratepayer are represented. There is way more to this than meets the eye. Please do not pass this legislation. Thank you.
Ms. Andrews, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Andrews? Nobody else is on? Okay, we're going to close public testimony. We're going to adjourn the Senate Finance Committee meeting. And we will be coming back this afternoon at 1:30 p.m. It will be on the introductory hearing of HB 50 by the governor, which is the carbon capture, utilization, and storage. If there's nothing else, come before the committee. We're adjourned at 9:30.